Welcome back, folks. Episode 34, Get a Grip on Lighting. On today's show, we have the great and powerful Craig DeLuey. Man, he's the editor of the Light Now blog. And for more than 20 years, Craig DeLuey has served the lighting industry as an educator, journalist, and marketing expert. For technical writing and training to e-marketing and advertising, Craig provides compelling communications that reflect an in-depth understanding of lighting technology, design, and trends. But you know what, Craig? He's also like a crazy science fiction writer. When I was looking up his bio, all I could see was all these crazy science fiction books that he's written. So, man, Craig DeLuey, thanks for coming on the show, episode 34. And Greg, this episode of the podcast is brought to you by Keystone Technologies. Go to KeystoneTech.com. Greg, go to KeystoneTech.com. Why are we going there?
Well, we're going there today to look at their LED high bay. So I know we talk about a lot of the LED retrofit products and how we say they're the retrofit kings. They really have a lot of good products, but they do have fixtures as well. And this is one that really entices me.
Hey, everybody, Matt, can you throw it up there for the YouTube viewers to see? Go ahead, Greg.
So everybody has an LED high bay, or there are a lot of options to choose from. But the thing that I love about this is the thing that bugs me about other high bays is I never know what driver is going into a high bay. Drivers are the issues in these high bays when you build them and you put them inside or install them down the road. If you ever need to get a replacement driver, good luck with this. It's a Keystone driver. You know the part number. You can buy the product. You can stock the driver. You can use it for all sorts of options. And it also goes in their high bay. And their high bay is small and compact, uses great lumens per watt, 100,000 hour life. I don't know what more you can ask for in an LED high bay.
Keystone just keeps cranking out great products, man. They think it through. You got to hand it to them, man, to Ira and Fred and Josh and the boys down there at Keystone. So go to KeystoneTech.com. That's KeystoneTech.com, baby. KeystoneTech.com for all your, for what is their tagline? Keystone Technologies.
Light made easy.
That's right. They have a great tagline too, man. So go to KeystoneTech.com. And this podcast and every podcast on the getagriponlighting.com website is brought to you by the National Association of Innovative Lighting Distributors. Go to NAILD.org to join us. Join Greg and I, come down to the convention, be like a Star Trek lighting dork with us. Or you can take some LS1, some LS2, some LS controls. Go to NAILD.org. But in the meantime, let's get Craig DeLuey going, boys and girls, on episode 34 of the Get a Grip on Lighting podcast. Welcome to the Get a Grip on Lighting podcast, Craig DeLuey.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
No problem. Say hi to Greg Eric.
Hello, Greg.
Hi, Craig. Thanks for being on.
Thank you.
So you're the creator of LS Controls. You run Lights Now blog, if I'm correct. Is it Lights Now?
Light Now. Yes.
Light Now, yeah.
Lightnowblog.com.
Yeah. Tell us your lighting story a little bit, Craig. How did you get into this business?
Well, like a lot of people, I didn't actually choose it. It sort of chose me. And going back to the early 90s, I got a job at an ad agency that was run by two Philips veterans and ended up working with a lot of retrofit companies. Sorry about that. Ended up working with a lot of retrofit companies like Magnetek, Prolight, Astrolight. Ended up doing some work with Greenlights, some work with the trade associations like NASCO and NALMCO and Nailed. And from there, I ended up becoming editor of Architectural Lighting Magazine. I moved to New York. I lived there 7 years. I ran the magazine, and then I went solo, and I've been doing that ever since. Working out of the home, doing lighting journalism, education, and consulting for different players in the industry. I've written recommended practices for the Illuminating Engineering Society. I do a lot of work for the Lighting Controls Association, all their website, all their education. And I'm the lighting columnist for several magazines, including Electrical Contractor and The Electrical Distributor.
Do you also write sci-fi novels? Is that correct?
Yeah, I write a bunch of genre fiction. I've written historical thrillers, fantasy, horror, you name it. That's been sort of a side gig, just a hobby, really, that ended up becoming a second career. And that's been really rewarding. I have two books coming out from Orbit, which is a major sci-fi publisher. They're coming out over the next year, so I couldn't be happier.
Wow, hang on
sci-fi and lighting, they go hand in hand, don't they?
Of course. These days, it seems like it, right?
Yeah,
It
for
does.
sure.
Yeah,
Didn't
for
you guys
sure.
just have Dan Ryan on with talking about the Matrix?
Yeah. Well, you know, I was going to ask you about that because it's one of our most popular shows. And while I was talking to Dan, he was kind of looking at me, Craig, like I was crazy. And what I was saying, you know, kind of is why do you have to choose to have the internet to connect to the internet? Why can't the internet choose to connect to you? And, you know, Li-Fi, you know, is really when you think about, you remember in the Matrix movie, and you're a sci-fi guy, so that's a legendary movie. So the picture is always the green screen with the zeros and ones coming down. You know that screen from the Matrix? That I think that's Li-Fi, man. That, to me, that's Li-Fi.
Yeah, if you had the eyes to see it, that's what you would see. I mean, that's Wi-Fi too, right? I mean,
No, but
but Li-Fi, yeah, certainly.
radio signals are different than light. Like there's something about radio signals that it's analog to lighting's digital, if that makes sense. You know, so whenever I've talked about Li-Fi or I've encountered Li-Fi, I've always thought about like you're in the internet, you're literally swimming through the zeros and the ones. And how come those zeros and ones don't know that you're there? As
Well,
opposed
they do if there's an interface, absolutely. And I mean, there's a consent, ideally a consent
Come on, Craig.
aspect
We're
to
come
this.
on. We're not that naive, are we?
Well, they'll know you're there. I guess if they do, if someone were to do face recognition, you know,
Or what
anything's
about or
possible.
gait
But in a
analysis?
typical arrangement, your cell phone, you know, that's what you would be ideal. You go into the store is not invasive to you, to your privacy, to say, hey, I know you're there and I know who you are. But rather, you have your cell phone out, you opt in, you have the app, and then away you go. You can have a relationship with the physical environment you're in, which I find fascinating, absolutely.
Do you find it scary at all?
No, not if there is an opt-in component. But with sensor technology, you could do face recognition, but it's like a lot of privacy concerns going on with the internet. Yes, you visit a website, you watch a cat video on YouTube, and the next thing you know, there are all these cat ads showing up on Facebook for you. Yeah, that is a little bit, that's disturbing, but they typically treat it in the aggregate. So, and I'm in my 50s, so I'm part of the generation that has a different idea about privacy than the younger crowd. But that doesn't worry me so much. It's when if someone were to do face recognition and they were to say, hey, that's you, and that had some consequence, then that would be very disturbing. But the amount of effort it takes for that, what they like to do is just take your IP, they sweep it up, they sell it off, and somebody sends you an ad. I don't find that as threatening, but I may be missing something.
Who wants to do that?
Well, that's what companies do. When you go to a certain website, they'll tag your IP. They know who you are, but they don't have your identity. They just know your IP, and then they aggregate that, sweep it up with a bunch of other IPs, and sell it to an advertiser. And ne next thing you know, you get a targeted ad, and that's pretty much how it works. With Li-Fi, I would imagine it would be a similar kind of thing, and Internet of Things. So if sensors are doing occupancy patterns in a building, they know where people are going, but they may not know where you're going specifically. Even though the capability, I guess, would be there, why would they do that? I guess is my point.
Well, I think
I
they
mean,
would do it.
I wouldn't want to work for a company that was like, we're tracking you, Craig, everywhere you go in the building. We want to know why you bought a soda,
Yeah,
when you should be talking to your
I
client.
think a lot of people would work for a company if the money was right. But Greg's been signaling me. He's got a question. Go ahead, Greg.
Well, I just want to relate it to controls, and that's a big purpose of having you on here, is to talk about your background in controls and a little bit about where it's headed and your thoughts in general on it. So to start off with, you did a course specifically for Nailed that was on lighting controls only. You want to give us just a quick rundown on that?
Yes. What it does is it provides a thorough introduction to the topic of lighting control. And so there's an introduction to lighting controls, looking at controls of systems and devices, looking at controls as inputs and outputs. Those combination of inputs and outputs deliver strategies, and those strategies deliver benefits, and those strategies are suitable for certain applications. And so the introduction component walks you through all of that. From there, we go into light sources. So we have all these different light sources, which are becoming increasingly LED, but not always. And so they behave differently and are better suited to different types of control. So it gets into, say, an HID lamp. We don't want to switch it. We want to, but it is capable of being dimmed. How does it dim? What does it do when it dims? And then from there, incandescent, fluorescent, and then, of course, LED. And how does LED behave when it's dimmed, which is a big deal, obviously, because control is a staple mainstream. We're finding sophisticated control being installed and promoted even in existing buildings where previously that wasn't really done that much before. And the majority of LED products are dimmable either as a standard feature or a standard option, and so with a negligible cost premium. And so the future is solid state, and the future is controlled. And so the course is important. And of course, we want to know how these controls work and how they interact with the light source. And then from there, we get into applications and design, commissioning. Basically, once you've selected your light source, you've selected the control that is interoperable with that light source. Now, how do we apply those strategies to spaces? What are the concerns? And rebates, how do we get the rebates for that? What rebates are available? Where do they go? What do you do once they're installed? How do you commission them properly, and so on and so forth. And so by the end of the course, ideally, the average distributor will have a thorough basis of knowledge for what controls are, what they do, what kind of strategies you can use with them, what the benefits are, how you communicate those benefits to customers, how do you apply them to spaces for customer benefit, and then ask the right questions of manufacturers and other players on the project team to make sure that everything goes smoothly.
Now, I have two questions here, and it's going to get Michael excited, so I'm going to ask them both. I would try to do it, but I think he's going to jump in quick. So my questions are controls confusing in your opinion, and do they have to be?
It depends on who you talk to, but yes, they often are. No, they don't have to be. And that's what everybody's working towards. As we're at this new moment in the lighting industry where controls are less an island and becoming more integrated with the lighting system. And so because of that, we have this big opportunity, and there's a lot more demand for it, and there's a lot more interest in it. But we have a traditional contracting world where they configure controls according to how they're wired, and that's how they've always done it, and that's comfortable. Now we're looking at a new world where controls are increasingly being configured using apps. By pairing devices. And this is new. And so anytime you have something new, it's automatically confusing. And so what there has to be is we had just had to get through this hurdle. But once it's through the hurdle, it will ultimately make controls less confusing or at least less complex. But that being said, we're entering a new time of complexity in that we're going to be looking at how controls deliver benefits beyond energy savings and beyond the traditional outputs of switching and dimming. And if we get into color, that's a whole new education process. If we get into Internet of Things and how this data, and we have data that's either going to be analyzed by a lighting control system for new things like occupancy patterns or thermal mapping, or we're going to take that data and we're going to share it with third-party software. These are all new concerns that require education. And so as controls get simpler, they are going to keep getting, they're going to go on being complex because they're just simply new things to learn for an industry that's always done it a certain way. And this is very similar to what we saw in LED. LEDs, like, well, they don't behave like traditional light sources. Well, we got to learn that. Okay, they have to be installed this way. They have to be done this way. These are all things that have to be learned. And controls is just like that as they undergo their own digital revolution.
Wow. So here's my take on it. I think from an energy efficiency perspective, Craig, you can accomplish 98% of what you want to accomplish with a properly installed and commissioned dumb control system as opposed to a smart connected control system. Would you agree with that statement?
If you were looking solely at energy, yes, you could do the exact same thing with a traditional dumb system. The question is, would you want to? With a digital control system, you have so much more, it's so much easier to configure. It's so much easier to change it, those settings after installation. And you have
But what we found, but hang on, but what we found with controls, Craig, is that after they're set, nobody changes them.
That is true for quite a few spaces, I would say. And that's why you have a controls market, similar to lighting and anything else, where you have different segments of the market who want different things. So in controls, even with connected lighting, the majority of systems out there are room-based. These are people who don't want to have this big building solution, and you have a facility operator operating the lighting system day-to-day and analyzing data and doing all of that. A lot of the systems are simple room-based connected lighting systems. They out of the box, they have energy code compliance. And so these are marketed based on their simplicity. So you install, they configure very, very simply with less wiring. They configure simply. You don't have to calibrate. You have out of the box energy code compliance, and so that's how you would want to do it. And then you can adjust.
And the equipment and the equipment that
bringing the contractor back with an app.
And the equipment, but the equipment is also. Are you talking about smart controls? Or are you talking about dumb controls there?
Oh, I would in that situation.
The last thing you were mentioning. Were you talking about dumb controls out of the box? Or are you talking about smart controls there?
I would be talking about smart controls. This would be an integrated control system.
So I'm going to challenge you a little bit here because I'm not totally convinced about the adoption, the usefulness. And I'm not saying that we can't make money selling smart control systems and that people would go for them because that is the thrust and momentum of the industry. Okay.
Right.
What I'm questioning is whether or not it's an upgrade or it's just something that's different. And a lot of times things come along and they're not necessarily better. They're just different. There's a better sales story to them. They sound sexier, for example. And it's like, yeah, you can control this with your iPad or you can have a controller there. And right. Sometimes I sit back as a lighting guy and say, well, why don't you just want the lights off in your storage room? Isn't that what you want? You know, I mean, do you really
want
to know?
That's all I want.
You know,
you're absolutely right.
You know,
what I would say to that is, yes, we want to be cautious about taking something that is highly featured and trying to take that perfectly square peg and fit it into all the round holes out there.
Mm.
Good lighting is application dependent. Good controls is application dependent. And so if you were to have a space that had a very complex control strategy arrangement, so you've got daylighting zones, you have you want scheduling, you want occupancy sensing on a granular basis. The owner wants this. The customer wants these things, or they're required to have these things for lead or energy
sure.
code or whatever they want to do. They want this. So the more complex the controls arrangement is, the more advantageous a connected lighting, smart lighting system becomes. They can be more elegant to install and things change. You don't want to have to go into this highly complex traditional control system and start recalibrating everything just in case you do want to change things. And so for that customer who has a big space and they just want to switch it on a schedule, traditional control is great for you. And there are very simple upgrades you can do in an existing building, from a wall switch aux sensor to a control panel upgrade. There's lots of things you can do. You don't have to go the full meal deal. If I were distributor, say, well, who's the customer? What do they want? Are they aware? That's the key, right? We don't want to go the other way. We don't want to force elegant highly featured stuff everywhere, but we don't want to discount the highly featured stuff because the customer isn't aware of it. We need to educate the customer on everything controls can do, just like we educate them on everything lighting can do now. And then we let them tell us what the application is. We identify the opportunities, and we have a palette of solutions behind us to deliver a satisfactory job for the owner and make the sale.
When you look at the impact the energy savings or the controls have on the energy savings of a facility, and how accurately do you feel people can really depict that? I know you can use data loggers, but how often do people do that? Not often.
He
Really
smiled and
seldom.
laughed. He smiled and laughed. He
I don't
smiled
think
and
right.
laughed.
I mean that
So
capability is offered, but how many lighting, before they put in TLED lamps, how many end users do a mock-up?
right.
They might, yeah. So or anything else in lighting. Mock-ups are for the customers who really get it and for the people who really push for it. Yeah, I'm sorry, but could you phrase that
But
question
yeah,
again?
how accurately can you assume the energy savings? Because right now you
Right.
take and you say, I think the lights are going to be off 3 hours a day, but you have no clue.
Right.
So.
It is difficult. So if you're doing connected lighting, I suppose you could have some sensors integrated with the luminaire that maybe it's easier now to do logging if you're doing a trial installations. Otherwise, yeah, you have to rely on a couple things. First of all, I acknowledge what you're saying. It is with lighting, you have watts and watts. It's very easy. With controls, it's highly variable and application dependent. So how do you project that? So one is you can estimate based on your experience. As distributors become more aware of controls and they sell them in more jobs and they have keep in touch with customers, they may be able to generate an experience base from which they can say, okay, well, the experts say this, but I found this based on this application characteristic you have, right? So daylight harvesting generates, say 28% energy savings according to so-and-so, this research study, but that was an aggregate. You've got this space with this kind of shading, you've got this going on in the space, so I think it's going to be higher or I think it's going to be lower. That's based on experience, and that's where experts in the industry, like distributors, can really shine because they bring something to the table based on their knowledge and their wisdom. The second thing you can do is rely on those third-party studies, acknowledging that they are guideposts, guidelines, not certainty and not fact. So there's the Lawrence Berkeley National Laboratory. They did a landmark 2012 meta study where they looked at, 80 to 100 studies that have been done and manufacturer case studies and third-party case studies, and they aggregated that data to develop guidelines on what they think average lighting energy savings are for different strategies. That's a great thing because customers love to hear Lawrence Berkeley National Laboratory. They like to hear credible. They like to hear third party, right? It's like that thing where you have a report and you see the graph. It's like, it must be true. It's in a graph, right? It's just a very simple graph.
Hey, look at the
And
lines. The lines go up. The lines
Lawrence
go
Berkeley
up.
National Laboratory says, right? But it has its drawbacks too. For example, they have occupancy strategies. Well, occupancy strategies based on schedule or occupancy sensing are very different things, but they don't separate them out. So it does have its limitations. And then of course you can rely on manufacturers. They have wisdom. Of course, the downside there is of course they're trying to sell controls. And then another possible source is energy codes, where the energy standards have acknowledged different advanced control strategies with a control factor, a power factor benefit to your interior power allowance. And so those numbers actually represent energy savings that can be pulled out of that. So there are sources for this kind of thing. A Design Lights Consortium just did a terrific study that came out last September, October, November, last fall, that analyzed 1,200 zones in something like 100 buildings. I'm going from memory here. I'm better writer than I am a speaker because of my memory, but
I think you're a great speaker, Craig. You're
oh,
good.
thank you.
Keep it
Appreciate that.
going, buddy.
About 1,000 zones in about 100 commercial buildings. And so what they were looking at is connected lighting, network lighting control systems, and how they perform. And they found a terrific variation in the amount of energy savings delivered, which shows you the perils of S and why you need good estimating, right?
Yeah,
The average
anecdotally.
was about 47%.
Like anecdotally, 47% sounds high to me, but anecdotally, I would agree with that. Like I think that so for me, we do a lot of projects where we study after the project how much energy savings the client got. Okay. So we'll put a year's worth of their hydro bills into a calculator we have, and then we'll plot it afterwards.
Right.
And if they simply do a lighting retrofit, okay, what we'll see is pretty much what we predicted, or we'll see some huge variance to extra energy savings, meaning they're leaving their lights on when they leave at night, like something like that. That's obviously what's happening, right? So they go from 5,000 kilowatt hours a month or whatever to 50,000 a month. We say they're going to go to 40,000. They go to 25,000 because they're leaving their lights on 24/7, or areas are being left on 24/7. When we do occupancy controls and we measure and verify, we see almost no energy savings to massive energy savings. And it depends on how often those spaces are occupied and how long the lights are left on for.
Right.
And whether or not the utility bills on time of use.
Right.
You understand? So in Ontario, we have time of use billing. Right? So if energy costs three times as much during 9 to 5 than it does from, you know, midnight till 6 a.m., which is true in Ontario, say, then and the parking garage is only empty at night, well, yeah, the kilowatt hour savings are there, but not the money, the cash savings. So there's different variables. It's a more complex environment. But what I wanted to get to was, is the adoption of controls a little early when we're talking about smart lighting? Isn't really what people want a smart building? And so instead of like saying, oh, we're going to have smart lighting controls, what I think what's happening is that lighting is becoming a part of a building management system. And that the real value is in having your HVAC, your lighting, your refrigeration, your parking meter sensors, everything in one hub. And I see that as really where the value is from an information and analytics perspective, which is what you can do with dumb controls in terms of energy savings, you can do with smart controls, but the extra value is in the analytics and the building management, and really you need to incorporate a bunch of different areas outside of lighting into that in order to get the full value.
Not to be cute, but you always end up saying it depends, right? Let me address a couple of things you said. One is, first of all, that was very well said. That my take is that the energy savings is going to be highly variable, and the value is going to be variable based on that, based on what the energy costs are and what the operating hours are typically. But also within connected lighting, what they found with the DLC study was the biggest energy savers and the least energy savers. I mean, it was like something like 70-80% energy savings down to like less than 5, right?
So yeah, for sure.
That's a big spread, right? Yep. And it's a little alarming. But what DLC speculated, and I happen to agree with them, is that the highest energy savings had multiple controls. They really took advantage of the network control. So they had multiple control strategies layered in the same space. And then they had aggressive control settings, which you can do with smart controls. So you could have, an occupant sensor time delay of 20 to 30 minutes during the day and then 5 minutes at night. Or with LED, you could do it, say, 5 minutes a night and 10 minutes during the day. If you're going to have network lighting controls, you actually have to use them, and you really have to engage with the capabilities of the system. It just doesn't out of the box give the X to you. You have to work with it, especially if it's one of the more sophisticated systems, right? The second thing you were saying was talking about where the ultimate value is. And the biggest value is absolutely in a smart building, because you have that 330, 300, right? So you've got lighting controls is great with the 3. Yeah. It's pretty good with the 30. You know, like you could take a lighting control system that's a building control system, building-wide lighting control system, and you could get occupancy data, and it could help you right there. You're doing an Internet of Things through an Internet of Lighting, right? You're doing it. You have occupancy data. You can have better space utilization. That's it, right? If that's what you want. So it kind of crosses over into the 30, and then you've got the 300. Well, dimming, you've got color tuning, you've got circadian lighting kind of floating around out there at the edge. You've got all some of these other things you can do with controls that go beyond energy. So you're kind of touching on the 300 now, which is employee costs. And you, do I have to revisit 330?
No, no, it's come up on the show. We understand it just for our listeners.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, so the three is, one second. The three is maintenance and energy. The 30 is the cost of real estate, and the 300 is the cost of employees, people.
Right, right.
Right, just for our listeners that haven't heard.
Average per square foot in a commercial.
Sure.
Right. And then, you know, I was at Strategies in Light, and, you know, the simplest things blow your mind, but Peter Schwartz went up and said, now we're looking at a theoretically a 3,000, right, with the internet of which is revenue. 3,000 or a multiplier thereof. So we're looking at
he's going to go on tour with that. He's going to go on tour with that.
I know sometimes the little things you're like, oh yeah, that's awesome. Let's steal that. So now we've got with lighting network lighting control potentially 330, 300, 3,000. Now, so does that mean we wait? Well, there's a lot of buildings being built. I would say there are plenty of benefits for network lighting controls. And if you don't do it, it's going to be really hard to do it later. Because the Internet of Things, we are sort of realizing it now, but in these little tiny ways. But that vision, right, of here's your building, and it's responsive, and everything's talking to each other, and it's sensing everything. And you've got this huge amount of data that you're improving business processes and generating new revenue, creating new services, doing all this stuff. Are we there yet? I'm not sure about that. So while we get there, I think that network lighting control stands up on its own. It delivers a terrific value, and that it is sort of like your stepping stone. Like it's getting the infrastructure in place, because it's hard for me. I can imagine network lighting control without Internet of Things, but it's hard for me to imagine it right now the other way around.
So let's take a real world example, and somebody has a commercial facility. They had fluorescent fixtures, for example, and they retrofitted to LED. Whether they did a lamp type or a fixture type, let's say they did a lamp and all their fixtures are now LED, they had a 2-year payback. Now, are you going to be able to go back to them and sell them on controlling those LED lamps or those LED fixtures? And if so, what's going to convince them? Because to me, the energy savings and the payback won't be there. Peace of mind might be there, or will be there for sure, knowing that, hey, the bathroom lights will turn off when somebody's not in there, and I don't have to worry about walking around the building and hitting lights at the end of the night. But right. What else will convince them? Or in your opinion, will that happen? Will people do that?
I would think typically not. I think it's difficult to justify lighting controls in an existing building when it's not part of a lighting retrofit. The lighting retrofit is the ideal time. You have all the resources and labor in place, and you can have a comprehensive solution. You know, if you say you want to do dimming later, but you installed TLED A lamps that don't dim. So now you've got a problem, right? Now you don't do dimming. So it's the best time to do this is all together, where you can consider the light source and is it controllable? And then you can consider the controls that can control these light sources and their application. After the fact, after LEDs are already installed, to do a large scale type of control retrofit, I think economically, based on payback and ROI that's typical out there, I think, my opinion, it would be more difficult to justify. That's not to say you couldn't do it with more like a maintenance upgrade. So it's like, look, you know, the bathroom lights stay on all night. That's really annoying. And we're wasting LED, the product life. Why don't we install a wall switch, aux sensor, or put in a little wireless thing? It's because it stalls, right? You're going to have maybe an ultrasonic sensor. Why don't we just do that? And then that gets done. And then little things get done around the building that are more like little line voltage type of retrofits. But the more comprehensive approach and strategies and things like that might end up waiting for a renovation cycle where you can do new LED fixtures. And now, oh, look, we've got all these controls with it. This is great. The Internet of Things is maturing. Let's do it. Pull the trigger.
I don't like the word future proof. You know, if I and this is just my opinion. I think the idea of if I get like, cause listen, the bottom line, Craig, is Greg and I stand in front of end users every day, and we talk to them about lighting.
And I'm a total academic, man. So I we bring totally different things to
Yeah,
the table.
I'll tell you a quick
But
story on that.
I
So,
respect what you're saying.
yeah, like Dr. Christopher Kiba came on the show, and we asked him, you know, why we should care why the sky is, if the sky is dark at night or not. And it was kind of a facetious question because I understand why, really. But I asked him that, and he said, "Well, because it will help your sales." And I felt like saying, "Listen, Dr. Kiba, I love you, but don't tell me how to sell light fixtures, okay, man?
Right.
You know, it's like I know how to do that. Don't worry about that." But
Right,
you
right.
know, when I'm standing in front of a customer, and let's say it's a factory or whatever, and you know, you're up against the project, and they want to do controls, they don't want to, unless they really know how they want to use connected lighting, unless they know how they want to do it. And we've done a couple jobs with connected lighting systems now, but it came from the customer, and they told us the reason, they told us the end goals they wanted to accomplish with connected lighting. And so we provided them with that. And actually, Greg was the guy that came up with this. He's like, "I'll give them the capability, but I'm not going to get involved in what they're going to do with it." And then I came across these two customers, and they're like, "We want a connected lighting system. Here's why. Here's what we want to be able to do. Find us something." And we found them something. And then, you know, we're going about doing the incentive application, and we're going to put the fixtures in and all that sort of stuff. And then they know what they want from it. But if I have a customer that doesn't know what they want from it and how they're going to use it and the human resources that are going to be involved and the IT technicians that are going to keep it rolling and all that sort of stuff, I don't know that it's something I would push, Craig. Is that fair?
Yeah, that's absolutely fair. The last thing you want to do is give them a, especially when you're looking at a building-wide control system. I would, if I were in your shoes, I wouldn't push that unless they had the skill set to operate it, to actually get something out of it. And this is why, and that's a small part of the market. Those are larger buildings, bigger projects. That's why, you know, the larger market is for room-based connected control systems, where maybe there is a future potential to link these together into a building solution if you want to do that. And that might be driven by Internet of Things. Yeah, I mean, that's typically how it would be done. I'm with you. I don't think that it's a good idea for an industry to push like this is the new best thing and it goes everywhere. Like, I think that it's a lighting proverb. Don't do that, you know?
Hey, we're
And
doing controls now. Hey, we're doing
right.
controls. Yeah, let's do it. Let's do it. Let's do it. You need, I think
Well, see,
it.
I like that idea. From everything, I think that controlling your lights is a good idea, period. I do. I just think that just like with lighting, you know, there are different solutions geared to different customers and different
Well,
applications, and
here's
you
the
have to
thing.
choose wisely.
Here's why this podcast has been pretty popular, is that I find, you know, I got to look that customer in the eye at the end of the day. If something goes wrong, they're going to call me. I find a lot of the people that are, you know, not all of them, but a lot of the people that are really, you know, pushing this very hard right now are going to be behind me, and I'm going to be in front of the customer, you know, trying to deliver that value, trying to make it work for them. And you know, out there trying to sell it, and the you know the party's behind me going controls, controls, yeah, controls, and I'm like, I don't know, man, does this guy actually need controls? You know, I don't know. And then, so, you know,
Yeah, but in that scenario, they're doing their job and you're doing yours.
yes, I guess so. That's why we need
That's what you think,
distributors.
right?
That's why we need
Absolutely.
that distributors.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So I mean, I don't know how to deal with this whole control thing because I know everyone's going there. I'm watching it. I'm doing jobs myself with smart lighting controls. Greg, have you done many? I got my first two in the books now. How about you, Greg? Are you doing a lot of lighting
With
controls?
smart lighting controls?
Yeah.
I mean, lighting controls we are, but the
No,
systems and all
connected.
that, not a lot. No, not
Connected.
connected. I
Yeah.
mean, so a couple, yeah.
Yeah. So, and so it's kind of like making its way down to the distribution level, to the contracting level now. And we're sorting it out in the trenches, on the front lines of the business. Is there any other, like, for me, I'm going hesitantly. I feel this force behind me pushing me forward into this realm, and I'm kind of leaning against it, trying to hold back to really wait to see the value. I don't think I'm missing anything yet, though, Craig. Am I missing something? I get emails, I get like LinkedIn messages sometimes saying, "Call again, you don't know anything about controls. You should bring me on the podcast. And, you know, you don't know what you're talking about." But I actually think I do, you know. And if I try to be humble, but sometimes it's like, I don't know, man. Most of my clients don't need this right now. Am I missing something on the smart connected lighting control side, Craig?
And again, not to be cute, I couldn't say. It really depends on your customers. But what I can say is I think it is a good idea for service and product providers in our industry to be aware of new trends and properly educated about them, to be able to engage with their customers in an intelligent conversation that is application specific about what these new technologies can do for them. And then say, if you want to do this, then you're looking at this. If you want to do this, you're looking at this. And why? Because I have some expertise in this area because I invested in education. And I think that is where, that is what I think distributors should do. And it, which brings me back to the NAIL program and some other education that's out there, is get informed, you know, be educated, don't make any assumptions, be able to one way or the other because there's buzz and then there's reality. And everybody has to decide for themselves where that is, and the customer has to decide for themselves. So the best you can do is become knowledgeable about the technologies and where they're applied, and then engage with the customer about that. And where the customer wants to, if the customer wants to do this, then you do it. If the customer doesn't want to do it, they don't do it. And that's how you do business and differentiate yourself from the competition by being that expert.
Nice. Now, one thing I was wondering, it's kind of a newer deal in controls, is the wireless sensors. You know, some companies have them, some don't. But in general, what are your thoughts? Would you rather be a hardwired into the hardwired sensors or wireless if you had a choice? And I know that there's applications where you need one or the other. But in general, I've talked to electricians.
Everything.
Yeah. Well, I talked to these electricians and they say, I don't want to do wireless because then I have to worry about this battery on the line. I just want to hardwire it in because I know the wire's going to it. But what are your thoughts on it?
I like wireless personally. And the reason why I like it is because it allows sophisticated lighting controls in existing buildings on a level that previously was not economical. So we can say, hey, can we do a traditional lighting control system in a building all we want to do every single thing that connected lighting can do? Well, yeah, but it's probably not going to happen. I don't see an existing building with, you know, fluorescence going to LED saying, let's put in, you know, a panel and aux sensors everywhere and a daily, let's put a photo sensor there and we're going to traditionally wire it. I don't really see that being typical. So with wireless, you can do that. So with wireless light, yep, we'll put it there. And guess what? Specifiers don't always get it right on the plans. Installers don't always get it right in the installation, either with where to place sensors or how to wire them. So what the wireless does is it takes a lot of that off the table. You don't like where the sensor is, you're getting bad results, you can move the sensor. If you want to put in layered control strategies into an existing building space, you can do that now without with less worry about the economics and less worry about the installation complexity. I like wireless, but the contractors have to learn something new. As I was saying before, they have to evolve past from the world of, you know, line voltage wiring as a way to configure controls to pairing devices using apps, which, by the way, I think is the future. And whether it's lighting or Internet of Things or anything else going into buildings. And so I think it's smart for them to learn that. The challenge of wireless is all the protocols, the density of proprietary protocols. We have Bluetooth mesh coming out. It came out, and now we have products coming out this year. It could either be, you know, the big solution, the new real solution, or it could just be one more protocol on the pile. We're not really sure yet. So there's a lot to navigate. It is complex, but it ultimately solves problems and enables new opportunities for existing buildings.
Now, as far as one other topic I wanted to ask you about is the DLC and the controls and how they're integrating that and actually going to make DLC rated control systems. Are you active in helping with that or researching it or any part of it?
I have written about it, but one of my clients is the Lighting Control Association. They are administered by NEMA. LCA is more like category promotion through education, and then at NEMA, these are the manufacturers that have a, you know, a vested interest. So they're engaging with DLC. It's more their bailiwick than what I'm doing day to day. But yeah, I'm aware of the program.
Do you think it's something that's necessary in control systems to make them DLC rated and non-DLC?
I think that the requirements that they impose, I would like to see that process have maximum industry involvement and that they can truly partner together. Otherwise, I think that going up to 2.0, a lot of the requirements are, it's more like categorization. They really haven't, from what my understanding, they haven't imposed a whole lot on the industry other than it's a lot of labor behind the scenes for these manufacturers and it's a lot of cost. So there's that, but otherwise I don't think there's a lot imposed on us saying like you have to reach a certain X level in performance. What they have done is categorized network lighting controls as far as a set of basic features and a set of advanced or optional features. And they have put this as a resource for the industry through their qualified products list. And then that has given a resource to the utilities and energy efficiency organizations to say, we're going to back this by rebates. I think that is that part of it is absolutely terrific. I love that the industry has this resource with where a lot of people in your shoes are saying, hey, this is kind of complex. This is a lot to sort out. But here's a qualified products list of in a simple, easy to compare format. I can evaluate products and find suppliers and products that have these this feature set. And then, oh, my utility now has a rebate. So I'm pushing my customer to a DLC premium solution because they said they want to maximize energy savings. And then I said, hey, did you know that if you have integrated network control, that's DLC, you get this bonus per fixture? I think that's a wonderful thing for the industry and will help drive demand for network controls into buildings where maybe they want it, but not bad enough that they're willing to pay the higher cost for it.
Wow. Okay. Well, Craig, thank you. I think that's a good place to end it. So thank you.
Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, no, it was our pleasure, Craig, and I'm glad you came on. And thank you for developing LS Controls. I have an employee going through it right now, and he thinks it's great. So yeah, I hope to hopefully one of these days we can meet. And
I'd like that. Absolutely.
Carry the discussion on. Thanks for coming on, Craig.
Thanks, Craig.
Hey, thank you very much. Take care.
Yeah. Keystone Technologies. Go to KeystoneTech.com. KeystoneTech.com. Greg, tell me a little bit more about those high bays with the Keystone drivers in it. How smart is that?
Oh, it's great. It's one issue you don't have to be concerned about. You're always going to know what driver is in that fixture, and you're always going to be able to get a replacement for it.
Or if you don't know, Keystone will know.
They'll know, and they'll take care of it. And in addition to that, some of the other things they've thought of that not everybody does is they put a frosted lens automatically on the fixture. Diffuses glare. There's so many high bays I see in the market that do not have a lens. They have the individual diodes that are glary bright. You can see them. You need a frosted lens. A lot of times you have to add that, and that adds cost to the product. They just put it on there knowing that you need the frosted
lens. It's such a no-brainer, man.
Absolutely.
Yeah. They got them in the voltages. Do they have colors? Do they have different colors on that product, Greg?
Different Kelvin temps. They have 12,000 to 28,000 lumens, 4,000K and 5,000K, and anywhere from 90 watts up to 215 watts of use.
So go to KeystoneTech.com. That's KeystoneTech.com, baby. KeystoneTech.com. And we'd like to thank the National Association of Innovative Lighting Distributors. Go to NALD.org. Take some educational products. Hey, I'm about to enroll a bunch of my peeps into LS Controls, Greg. Have you done that yet?
I've done the course myself. I haven't enrolled our people, but it is a great idea and something I've got to do as well because that's where the future's heading, at least what a lot of people are telling us.
Yeah.
So let's get prepared and take that course.
Sure. So go to NALD.org. I don't even think you need to have LS1 to take LS controls, do you? If you just want to take the controls course, you can do it. Yeah. I think you got to pass like a 20 question. Like, do you know anything about lighting test? and then you can take the course. So if you just want to get that controls course, go to NALD.org, baby. And Craig, man, you're awesome. Thanks for coming on the show. It was really, really good of you to spend some time with us. And then, you know, also to tell us about your take on the lighting industry. Craig, what did you think of Craig?
I thought he was excellent. I've talked to him in the past when I was the NALD president. He was putting together that lighting controls course. And I know he's very smart and knowledgeable in that. And he also does a great job of the writing blogs and articles related to lighting. So I thought it was awesome to have him on. I'm glad we did.
And he's really gracious too. He's a great guy, very humble. So it was good to have him on. Thank you very much, Craig. That's episode 34 of the Get a Grip on Lighting podcast.
Written on the rectory wall, there's a sign there for all. You are lost, the Lord is there to find you. Boys, I know it's hard, temptation's all abroad. All you need is calm, the door's always open.